The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Welcome right now to the Lunchtime Doctor, and we have Dr. Taylor in for Dr. Dean today. How are you, Dr. Taylor? Good afternoon.
Hello, Bass. I'm fine, thank you.
Nice. What's the weather doing with you?
Well, you know, it's been rainy off and on, and we had the tropical wave alert. So
yes.
Yeah, lots of showers.
Just be careful out there, folks, especially on the roads. You hear how many road fatalities we're having out there, right?
Yeah.
So today's topic, we're talking about heart failure, the heart today.
And, you know, the question is, why is heart failure so important to discuss? Now, when we look at it, we just want to remind our callers that if you have any questions related to heart failure or not, any single question, we will try to answer it as best as we can. And the numbers are,
of course, 627-3223, back up, 625-2257. And of course, you could WhatsApp us at 306-1065, and feel free to message our other frequencies, and they will send your questions right to us here in studio, the Lunchtime Doctor.
Yeah. And so heart failure. So what is heart failure? Now, in simplicity, heart failure is when the heart is unable to meet the blood supply demands of the body. So in essence, the heart is unable to pump enough blood to the rest of the body. That includes the organs, as well as the other muscles and other tissues that need blood to survive. You know, so why is it so important? It is important because it's a significant cause of mortality, meaning death, as well as prolonged sickness and illness. And obviously then it will take a big toll on the societal aspect of it, in terms of functioning at work and, you know, taking care of family members and quality of life.
Yeah, definitely. So what is the difference between heart failure and a heart attack?
Excellent question. Now, a heart attack usually occurs when you have a sort of blockage in one of the big arteries to the heart that cuts off the blood supply to the heart. And now the heart, because it starts to die, the muscles die because of lack of oxygen, etc. The funny thing is, heart attacks can lead to heart failure, and it's actually the most common cause of heart failure. So heart failure is when the heart is unable to pump the blood, whereas the heart attack means that the vessel is blocked and the heart begins to die. Yeah?
Definitely. All right, so there are different types of heart failures. What are some of the different types of heart failures?
Right. So heart failure can be classified many different ways, but the easiest way to classify would be if what we say is the ejection fraction. That means how much percent of blood is the heart able to pump at any given time. And it's either that is normal or it's not normal, meaning the heart is pumping enough blood or the heart is unable to relax properly, so not enough blood is going out. You know, so then we want to look at the different causes of why this can happen. And as I said earlier, the most common cause is when you have a heart attack or repeated heart attacks, or you have what you call the coronary artery disease, which leads to what we call ischemic cardiomyopathy. So in essence, that means that the heart is not getting enough blood, and therefore the muscle dies, and as the muscle dies, it becomes weak, because the heart is a muscle, right? And it pumps and relaxes. So that is the most common cause. After that, we have things like high blood pressure, because we have what we call hypertensive heart disease. We could also have valvular heart disease, where the valves, we have four big valves in the heart, and if one of them is not working, either it's too tight or it's too loose, that can result in heart failure as well. We have other things. So these are kind of relatively common as well.
Right.
And we could move on to things like drugs. So people who are taking stimulants, things like cocaine, amphetamines, that is actually something we see as well too in our population.
And of course, smoking.
Right. Yeah. And alcohol. Yeah. Oh. It's something called alcoholic heart failure or alcoholic cardiomyopathy, where this person has been drinking alcohol for a substantial time, and now the heart dilates or balloons or it swells and the walls become very thin, and now the heart is unable to pump properly.
Right.
You know, we also have the situation where you have anemia. You know, I believe we spoke about anemia sometime in the past, but in essence, prolonged anemia causes the heart to eventually fail if you're not taking care of it properly.
But I know sometimes we tend to forget that the heart is actually a muscle. So how do you actually keep the heart healthy?
Excellent. You know, as with any muscle in the body, for example, if you want to train your biceps, right, you do the movement, the contraction and the relaxation. So for the heart, it's the same thing. You have the contraction and a relaxation. So if you want to improve that strength, you do things like cardiovascular activity or aerobic activity, which means the walking that we spoke about. You know, we always talk about the 150 minutes of moderate intensity, walking, cycling, you could say jogging too if you like, swimming too, or the 75 minutes of vigorous, where you can't hold a conversation, you could do fast swimming, you could do sprinting, etc. And then you can couple this with 2 to 3 days of resistance training, which could be weights, it could be resistance bands, you know, calisthenics, all these different type of things. So you want to strengthen the heart so that it could pump well, you know?
Right. You know, sometimes these things will come up, I don't know, well, apps or these things where you tend to hold, well, hold your breath,
right,
until you hold your breath for a certain time, and it reaches from, if it reaches from point A to point B for a couple of seconds or even for a minute, it will tell you, okay, you're healthy.
Right.
Are those things good to do?
Right, so that's breathing exercises. That is slightly different. So that is more looking at your pH balance. So, for example, there's something called the Wim Hof method.
Right.
It's very potent. This guy essentially... He went up Mount Everest in his underpants, basically.
Right.
And he's claiming that he used a breathing technique in order to adjust the acid-base balance in his blood, which allowed him not to freeze to death and do this, you know, immense feat.
Right.
You know, so, so breathing techniques are useful, yes. But in terms of breathing and the heart, yes, the lung can actually cause heart failure too.
Okay, we have a call on the line. Hello, good afternoon, welcome.
Yes, boy.
Hello.
So this is why I asked me to have a better chance of survival. But I want to find out something very interesting. This heart. We had a topic about this business, and some doctor here, the complicated piece of machinery. The heart, if you get, if it goes dead, right, as I just say, could it revive and come back, start back beating again?
Right, you mean if you have like a cardiac arrest?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so that's a good question. If you have a cardiac arrest, can your heart start to beat again? Now, the answer to this would depend on a few things. One, are you in the hospital, right? Because to get it to start to beat again, you would need something called CPR, right? Where one of the bystanders would perform chest compressions and rescue breaths in an attempt to mimic the natural response of the heart to beat. If they get to you in a timely manner, when we say timely manner, we're talking about 15 seconds to 2 to 3 minutes of that event. Yes, it can come back. I've seen it happen, right? I've been involved in it happening as well too. But if it's an unwitnessed cardiac arrest, the chance of it, you know, reviving is slim to very little bit, you know, essentially.
Now, we talked about a little bit about some of the causes, but like let's say like being weight, overweight, and even though of lately we've been seeing a lot of people who are, you know, who we deem physically fit, they may suffer from heart failure as well. So where's the difference there?
So, that's a very good question. So when you look at the, let's say, obesity, essentially the fat is now increasing potentially the pressure within the arteries, which means the heart has to beat harder and faster. for the blood to move through the body and to the organs.
So you put in more work on the heart, the more
exactly.
Work.
And what happens now is that we have what you call hypertrophy. So just like a muscle, the muscle can get stronger, but in the heart, it's different. So if you are an athlete, your heart will get bigger and stronger to a limit. Once you exceed that limit, now you actually go in the other way. So now the heart is not functioning as well, even though it's bigger. And so we call it cardiomegaly. So the heart gets very big. If you look at the x-ray, the heart is humongous. This can lead to heart failure as well too. And so if you are small now and you are having heart failure, then we have to consider other factors. You know, we talk about the drugs. We spoke about the coronary artery disease too, because this can happen in slim people as well, especially if you're predisposed to diabetes as well too. And obviously high blood pressure too. These are common things. And the other things would be things like genetic conditions, but these would tend to present a little earlier because there are things like hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. All that means is the heart is extremely big, so that not enough blood is going into the heart because of how big it is. And this is when you see an athlete die suddenly. So especially like these people tend to die between like 19 and 20, around that age. They're on the field and they're playing football and they just suddenly die. It's not common, but it happens, you know.
What about people who are born with a hole in the heart?
Yeah. So the hole in the heart, that is called a septal defect, depending on which part it is in the heart. So in the heart, we have four chambers. And if the lining or the demarcation between any of the chambers has a hole, then that is very serious, because what happens is the blood can flow backward, right? And now you can have a reversal of the pressures, because the heart works as a pump and as a vacuum. Because when it pumps, you create a negative vacuum or a negative pressure where the blood returns from all the veins back into the heart. So if you have a hole, you could imagine that pressure gradient is going to change. And now you could have swelling on one side of the heart where it's not supposed to be swollen. And then that could lead to heart failure again.
Okay, yeah. Before we take our break, what are the early warning signs and symptoms of heart failure?
Yeah. So essentially, some of them are non-specific, but we look at things like shortness of breath. The shortness of breath can be at rest at the worst, and with minimal exertion at probably the best, right? And things like needing to sleep with more pillows than usual. So let's say you sleep with one pillow, all of a sudden when you lie flat, you need two and three pillows, and you could even need to sleep sitting upright. That is another sign. That's a bad sign. We look at swelling in the legs, right? Heart failure is one of the causes of swelling in the ankles coming up, as well as you can have chest pain as well too. You can have palpitations, and also you can have the feeling of dizziness, and you could also have this feeling of generalized fatigue. So you're just tired and you're not sure why. Those are the symptoms.
All right, folks, so we take a short break and we come right back. Lunchtime Doctor today. Folks, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor today, Tuesday, the 11th of June. Of course, our numbers are 627-3223, 625-2257, 306-1065. And even though we're talking about heart failure, feel free to message us with any of your medical issues. So we continue the diagnosis of heart failure. How is heart failure diagnosed? Is that what, and I'm sure we will be getting into the ECG and yes. The echogram and those things, you know?
Yeah. So when we diagnose it, we actually look at the signs and symptoms. So everything I just mentioned earlier, specifically looking at things like shortness of breath, leg swelling, abdominal swelling, especially if they are rapid onset, as well as the pillows. We call that orthopnea, when you have more like two plus pillows to sleep comfortably without having shortness of breath. That is what we look at. Then when you come to the hospital, we check your vitals, we look at your blood pressure. Is the blood pressure very high? then we are going to listen to the lungs and the heart. Are we hearing fluid on the lungs? That is one of the signs of what you call decompensated heart failure. So, you know, if you have fluid on the lungs, that is a bad sign. And obviously, if the blood pressure is high too, as well too, then we do the ECG. The ECG can tell us information about the heart as it relates to heart failure. Are you having a heart attack, or is the heart very swollen that the conduction is not normal? And one of the other tools that we have is a blood test, where the blood test can actually tell us how much fluid you have on board. Because when you talk about heart failure, we tend to talk about fluid overload, meaning the body has too much fluid, right?
And that, now, how does the body get too much fluid? You're drinking too much water?
Right. So that is it. So
serious?
Yeah. So, okay. So when the heart has failed, mm-hmm. right, or you have heart failure, drinking a normal amount of water for a normal person cannot work for you. If you do that, you know, within a few days, you will be visiting the emergency department because you will be unable to breathe. The feet will have swollen, even the scrotum. Sometimes in women, the vagina swells, all the lips and stuff swell. The belly swells as well too. You know, it's very difficult to see and to deal with. So that is one of the treatments that we will talk about later on. And the other test that we do would be the echocardiogram. So the echocardiogram is a very complex test, but essentially it's just an ultrasound scan of the heart. And we look to see if the valves are good. We look to see if the pumping action is strong or not.
All right, we have a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hello.
My question is, what is the benefit of CoQ10 on the heart?
Okay, so thank you.
So that's a good question. So there is evidence to say that CoQ10 can actually help heart health. It also has anti-inflammatory properties. But as with a lot of things, when it comes to saying we have overwhelming evidence that this can, you know, for example, prevent death or reduce morbidity, we don't have that type of data. As you can understand, certain things are difficult to get those type of, so for example, vitamins, right? You can't get overwhelming data to say that you take vitamin C and it's going to prevent a heart attack, or this will prevent a stroke in 50 days, something like that. We don't have those type of studies, but theoretically, we have evidence to say that CoQ10 can help your heart health, and it has anti-inflammatory properties to the heart.
Mm-hmm. I had a question coming in here. Hi, good day. If someone has 5 extra beats in their heart, mm-hmm. can they get a heart failure? I did a Holter mm-hmm. test, mm-hmm. and that was the result, stating I have 5 extra beats in my heart. Explain that.
Right. So the Holter test is usually a 24-hour test or a 24-hour ECG, where you put on the monitors and you go home, and it records your heart rhythm for 24 hours. It can be 48, it can go up to a week, depending on the device. Now, when you say 5 extra beats, that is slightly vague, because I think you're talking about what you call premature ventricular contractions, which means the heart is beating additionally. So what would happen is, if the beats are consecutive and recurring, that is a problem. If it's just 5 extra beats alone, then that is not a problem. So it depends on, you know, the type of rhythm. Is it recurring? And in essence, if the beats are from the ventricle itself, right, meaning you have like a ventricular arrhythmia or an irregular rhythm in the ventricle, that can be a problem. But obviously, a cardiologist would have recommended the test, and they would tell you what's the follow-up advice, because, again, that is a little vague, just saying, you know, so they would have to determine like, are they occurring consecutively or not, or are they even reoccurring? But generally it doesn't sound like something too significant, but then you have to look at the medical history. What is happening? Have you had a heart attack before? That will determine the treatment.
And in terms of a heart rate, what is a normal heart rate supposed to be?
Yeah. So normal heart rate generally is under 100, or you can say 60 to 100 beats per minute. And there's new evidence to prefer 55 to 90 beats per minute. So either one of those, but both are under 100. If you're an athlete, obviously your heart rate will probably be in the 50s or maybe even 40s to 50s, you know? Yeah.
All right, so we're moving on now. Well, what are some of the main risk factors for developing a heart failure?
Right, so the main risk factors were, we could essentially say the same things that we said before, you know, uncontrolled diabetes with coronary artery disease, high blood pressure, obesity, smoking, alcohol use, and drug use. We could leave it at that.
What about stress?
Stress? So that's an excellent question, because there's something called stress cardiomyopathy. You can actually have something called broken heart syndrome.
Broken heart?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
well, you know, the Japan, is it like the Tabanka?
Yeah. So essentially, it's a real thing.
Okay.
You know, so imagine, for example, you have been with this person and whatever happens, and, you know, the relationship doesn't work out.
Okay.
And you are so deeply invested, you have this emotional surge, right, of adrenaline and all the other amphetamines in the blood. Now, this can actually cause the heart to swell, dilate, and you can have heart failure from that, or a very traumatic event, you know, like that can be associated with like PTSD and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can actually go to a doctor and say, "Doctor, I'm suffering from a broken heart."
You can do that. You're right.
What would be the prescription for that?
Right, but they would assess you to see exactly the extent of this broken heart. Is it just mentally, or is your body physically manifesting the signs? Because again, we have the signs and symptoms of heart failure. So if you're presenting with the shortness of breath and things like that, fluid on the lungs, and we do the echo and we see the features on the echo, then that is problems.
All right.
Yeah.
So how does the heart failure actually affect the body and daily life?
Yeah. So for example, if you have poorly controlled heart failure, you know, you haven't been taking your medications, or you are undiagnosed, you're going to have difficulties just doing the activities of daily living. So just climbing the stairs is a chore. You know, you go up two steps and you're gasping for air, right? You're walking with you're shopping and you can't make it to the car. Shortness of breath, plus or minus chest pain. You sit down home, the leg's swollen, can't walk properly. You know, the scrotum swells, you can't pass urine. You have urinary retention, the belly swells, you can't fit in your clothes, you're tired. You understand where we're going with this? And obviously that will impact, if you are working, well, depending on your job, if you're doing something like security, construction, well, you might not be able to work anymore, yeah.
Somebody says here, "I was told I have right side branch blockage. Can you explain?"
So, assuming speaking about the heart, the right side, so the right coronary artery. So we have two. We have the left and we have the right coronary. The left usually supplies the most important part of the heart, which is the left ventricle, and the right coronary artery supplies the other side, including the right ventricle and stuff. Now, the right artery can affect your heart rate if it's blocked. So it can be slow. You may need a pacemaker, all these different things. But it is usually the less severe of the two, because if you have the left side blocked, that most times, you know, results in heart failure, because the left side is what is needed to pump the blood, and if that dies, well, that's a problem. So you may or may not need a stent or open heart surgery based on if that's the only one affected.
And as you mentioned, well, stents and also the, we have a call. A call first. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hello.
Question. Mm-hmm. Can someone overwork their heart during exercise? And if so, what are the signs?
That's a very good question. So yes, someone can overwork their heart during exercise. So that question is twofold. One, do you have a structurally normal heart or not? So remember, I spoke about the other issue when the heart is too big and, you know, you could have sudden death, right? So that's one. But this is not common. This is a genetic thing. So that is why we ask you, did your mother or father die early from cardiac disease? Like when we say early, you're talking about under 50. And if we have something like 30 years old, that's a red flag. That's one.
That could be hereditary?
Yeah, that is hereditary. Mm. And then the other one would be, okay, is your heart normal? If your heart is normal in terms of structure and stuff, it's very difficult to overwork the heart. Very, very difficult, because the heart is very adaptive. It could adapt. So you could train for a whole day, right? And your heart can be okay if you have a structurally normal heart. If the heart is abnormal, let's say you have heart failure, you have to be very cautious now, right? You have to be very cautious when you are training. So all the recommendations that we give usually applies to people with normal hearts. If the heart is not normal, then you have to be more gentle in the approach to exercise.
Before we go for the break, somebody just wanted to go over the rates. Repeat the heart rates again.
So normal heart rate, 60 to 100 beats per minute. Mm-hmm. And other...
Is there a way that you could probably test on your
Yeah. So easy way. Mm-hmm. You see the thumb. Mm-hmm. You slide two fingers along the thumb up to the wrist joint. Mm-hmm. And then you place it and you should feel the radial pulse.
Okay.
Yeah. So you put on the timer, mm-hmm. 15 seconds, mm-hmm. count how many beats you get in 15 seconds, yeah. multiply by 4.
Okay.
And that is your rate. Or you do the long way and you just hold it for 1 minute, mm-hmm. and you count, and it could tell you exactly how many beats per minute.
Okay. You will finish it up for the rate?
Yeah. So 60 to 100, and some other people say 55 to 90.
55
So it depends on who you listen to.
All right. Thank you. We take a break and we come back. Dr. Taylor is in today. Lunchtime Doctor. Lunchtime Doctor, as we discuss heart failure. So can heart failure be reversed, or is it a lifelong condition, something that you have to live with?
Yeah, that's a good question. Can it be reversed? It depends. So there are certain situations where you can have heart failure and it can be reversed. So for example, if you have a viral infection, there's something called viral myocarditis that can result in severe heart failure very rapidly, and with time I have seen that reverse back to normal, going from like 15% EF back to normal. I've seen that in terms of regular heart failure that is from like the heart attacks, etc. Can it be reversed? What I would say is it can be improved. So with the medications, you can improve the heart health and the strength. You can look at maybe even 10-15% improvements if you are taking the prescribed medications, because we have evidence to say that they can improve the heart health.
What are some of the lifestyle changes one can make to prevent heart failure?
Right. So again, we will start the exercise. Very important. Keeps the heart healthy, strong, prevents blockages and stuff like that. We look at the diet as well too. You want to avoid all those high sugary foods, the bad fats, you know, the saturated fats, the trans fats, all the basically the fried foods, because of the type of oil that they use. You know, there was just a study that came out the other day with canola oil, saying that it can predispose to Alzheimer's. But it was a test done on mice. But you got to be careful with all these hydrogenated oils and terrible.
All right. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes.
I'd like to find out from the guy there, what is the difference between cardiac arrest and a heart attack? And what are the symptoms of the two conditions?
Yeah. Okay, good question. So a heart attack is when you have the blockage in one or more of the arteries in the heart that stops the blood flow to the heart and can cause muscle death in the heart. Now, the symptoms of this would be chest pain, which tends to be heavy or pressing on the left side or even central, going down the arm, up the neck, maybe associated with jaw pain as well too. You can have shortness of breath, cold sweating, and dizziness too, palpitations. That is a heart attack. Cardiac arrest can result from a heart attack. And a cardiac arrest is when the heart stops beating. So essentially you are dead. That is cardiac arrest. So when people say they die and they see the light and all these things, they have had a cardiac arrest, and they may be resuscitated with the CPR and these things.
What about the heart skipping a beat? When they said, is that a real thing?
Yeah. Mm. So that is one of the definitions of a palpitation.
Mm.
So it's an abnormal beat in the heart, or feeling the heart racing like that. That could be termed as a palpitation. It's normal to have that, say, once or twice, happening to you. That's normal. But if it's occurring frequently, that's a big issue.
All right. And of course, what about when you're getting the panic attacks or anxiety attacks? Is that like a
sign? So the panic attacks also come in with the palpitations. Mm. That is one of the signs, the chest pain. So panic attacks can have the same symptoms as a heart attack, right? Except the chest pain tends not to be the depressing, the heaviness. It could be sticking or a different nature. But that is why you can understand how difficult it is for somebody who has heart disease and anxiety, because one triggers the other. If you have anxiety, you have a panic attack, then you could actually have a heart attack because you cause the heart to race off. And when your heart races off now, you can't manage that oxygen demand for the heart. And that could lead to a heart attack. So that is why those two, I always say, is one of the worst. They are one of the worst combinations to have.
All right. And what is the difference between a palpitation and an arrhythmia? Or is it the same thing?
Very good question.
Mm.
So an arrhythmia is an abnormal heart rhythm, right? And a palpitation is a sensation of the abnormal heart rhythm. You understand? So the ECG diagnoses the arrhythmia. The palpitation is what the patient feels.
Mm. And what are some of the treatments, the latest treatments, now options available for heart failure?
Yeah. So we have medications. We have medications that do multiple things. One is that we want to slow down the heart rate. That has been found to be one of the most useful things in terms of helping the heart. Because when you slow down the heart rate, you allow the heart chance to relax and fill with blood. And now you push out the blood, right? But if the heart is going too fast, it's not filling, so you're not getting enough blood out of the heart, right? That's one. We also have the medications that deal with the sympathetic system, which is the flight or flight system in the body. We want to calm that down, and that also helps us activate the kidneys as well to excrete water or urine to offload the heart, right? And there's also other things like implantable cardiac defibrillators based on the type of heart failure that you have. We could put in that plus or minus a pacemaker. So this is the one that will shock you. That is the ICD. And you can have a pacemaker. This is when the conduction in the heart is off. So now either the heart is beating too slow and you're blacking out and all these things, or you're having issues with the rhythm.
All right, folks, 627-3223, 625-2257. We're talking heart failure. But of course, if you have any other questions, feel free to message us or give us a call. You could also send a WhatsApp message to 306-1065. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5, and Sangeet 106.1. We were talking a little while ago about the stems in the heart. Well, let's take a call first. Hello, good afternoon. Hello? Yes?
Hello.
Good afternoon. I want to find out, right, about left ventricular hypertrophy.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it was diagnosed after not being able to control the blood pressure.
Right.
But I want to know how I can try to resist it.
Right. Good question. Okay. No problem.
Yes.
Yeah. So left ventricular hypertrophy, or LVH. So essentially, this is what we are talking about when we say that the muscle of the heart becomes enlarged, right? It can be one-sided or both-sided. It tends to be one-sided more often than not. That's the left side. And the left side usually is the strong part, because that is the part that pumps out the blood to the body. Now, it can become enlarged in different situations. In your specific situation, it's high blood pressure. And if you want to reverse that, you have to do a few things. One, you have to control the blood pressure. So that is one. So you can't be having your blood pressure over 140 at all, the top number. It can't be going over 140. So you have to take the medications, and I assume they would have prescribed special drugs that actually can reverse or offload the heart. Because aside from managing the pressure, the medications do different things. We have what we call the preload, which is the pressure to the heart, and you have the afterload, which is the pressure after the heart. So you want to reduce the afterload with certain medications, and this increases urine output, and it can actually do something called remodeling. So you can actually prevent the heart from getting worse. And if the pressure of the heart is off long enough, it can potentially get smaller, and it can relieve the symptoms. They may or may not even give you things like diuretics, which actually make you pass more urine, you know. So recommendations would be, one, you take all the medications that were prescribed to you. If you are able to exercise, you exercise, but don't do the high intensity training. Just do things like the walking. Right, do that could help the reduce your blood pressure, right? And obviously you're looking at your diet too, right? Low salt diet, basically, long story short.
Mm-hmm. All right, questions coming in there. I have heard of a person going to the hospital because of a heart attack and was told that the medication to be administered is 50-50, either you survive or you didn't. Wow. Is this true?
Yeah, so it, based on context, right? Because if you have a big heart attack, there's a medication that we use that is stronger than the regular blood thinners and anticoagulants. It's very strong. We call it the clot buster. And if this is administered, it tends to break up the clot, or it can be associated with bleeding, which can be bleeding in the brain. And if the blood count is very low, you can die. So that is probably what they were alluding to. If they say it's 50-50, meaning it may or may not break up the clot, or you may or may not have severe bleeding. But you have to sign the consent form, because it's informed consent. You have to be aware of all the risks and complications.
Someone says here, hi, good afternoon. I'm getting swelling feet, shortness of breath.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what to do?
All right, excellent. Mm. So easy advice. You take a trip down to the health center or the emergency department based on how severe the swelling is. If the swelling is going up above the knees, definitely emergency department. If the shortness of breath is not that bad, maybe health center. But what they will do is they'll look at the three main causes of that, which could be heart failure, kidney failure, liver failure, right? But in our population, it tends to be either heart failure or kidney failure, unless you're an alcoholic.
In pregnancy in women, can that affect your heart?
Yes, okay. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Now, pregnancy, you have something called pregnancy-induced cardiomyopathy again, where the heart can fail because of pregnancy. And it's even worse if you have a pre-existing valvular heart disease. It can be fatal. Sometimes it could be so bad that you are cautioned against becoming pregnant because of how severe it is, or more times than not they will tell you can't do a normal vaginal delivery, because now remember you have to push, and that is a lot of strain on the heart. Yeah.
All right, we have a question coming from Sangeet. I'm having a severe pain, top right abdominal, constantly, like a cramping.
Yeah. So that area is associated with the liver. So you need to ask yourself a few questions. Do you drink alcohol for a long period of time, or are you overusing alcohol? That's one. The other thing it could be is gallbladder related. Mm-hmm. If you are a woman, we look at the fat fertile over 40. These are the contributing factors to gallstones. So those are the two things that it could be. Or it could just be some like pleurisy as well too. Definitely go and check it out, because you don't want to be having a stone there for long and then it ruptures, and that could be fatal.
All right, let's take our final break and we come back. Hold on there. Oh, let's take a call first. All right, hello. Call all right, we take the break and we come back. Get us into the Lunchtime Doctor. As we get ready to wrap up, we're talking about heart failure today. So in terms of our caregivers and family support, someone with heart failure, how does that work?
So I want to say the most important thing is understanding your disease. When we are looking at heart failure, people need to understand what is happening so that they can avoid hospitalization. So the most common reasons for hospitalizations are as follows. One, you have missed your medication. By whatever means, if you miss your medication, especially the diuretic, or some people commonly know the furosemide, if people miss that 2 days plus, you are in big trouble, right? So you don't want to miss the medication. Two, low salt diet. So you don't want to be eating a lot of salt. So sometimes the relatives tend to bring certain foods, you know, for the patient, and this is not good, right? Certain things, all the fried foods that have a lot of salt, is very bad, right? So definitely avoid that.
Mm-hmm.
The fluid restriction. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
We have a call.
Yeah, we have a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon again. Well, I want to find out if I'm taking a dose of 81 mg aspirin regularly, mm-hmm. could help prevent a heart attack or a stroke.
Yes.
He's gone, or that's it? Okay. Well, I know a lot of times you hear take aspirin to prevent a heart attack.
Yeah, so that's what we call primary prevention. So you'll either have aspirin and or cholesterol medication, such as a statin, and that is to prevent heart attack and stroke. That's fine once your blood count is good.
All right, 3 minutes away from clock. Of course, we address the cramping in the top right abdominal constantly, and any more medications that can be taken for heart failure, and what are some of the resources available for patients and families dealing with it?
Right. So, well, we have the clinics. Mm-hmm. So we have heart failure clinics. We have obviously the health centers and the cardiology clinics. These are where you would get the tests for the echoes. You know, make sure that if you have an echo done, please have the report. If you go to the hospital, make sure you know your numbers, your EF, your percentage, or 50%, whatever. That will help prevent you from needing to have another one done too soon, and it will save the doctor time too, because it will help you the diagnosis. And also, I just want to say that today is Dr. Dean's birthday, so I want to say shout out, happy birthday, Dr. Dean. Hope you're having a good one.
Happy birthday, Dr. Brittany Dean. Yeah. All right, and of course, she's on her way to the competition, right?
Yeah, well, she's prepping today. Mm-hmm. I think there's an interview.
Yeah, man. Yeah. All right, so congrats and good luck to Dr. Brittany Dean. All right, so we'll catch you tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Dr. Taylor, of course, as we spoke on a heart failure today, people messaging. Many thanks to all those who messaged and all those who called in. Any idea of our top? Hey, by the way, I was to mention this month of June is Men's Mental Health Month.
Right, so we have to do something.
Men's Mental and Father and Sunday's Father's Day.
Wow.
Get the men. I know tomorrow's supposed to be Women Wednesday. I don't know if she changed you up to do that, but you know, get the men a little something.
True.
Right, Father's Day on Sunday, and this is Men's Mental Health Month. Okay. Yes. So many thanks, of course, folks. The Lunchtime Doctor. You heard it right here, or you hear it right here Monday to Wednesdays. Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5, and Sangeet 106.1. Do enjoy the rest of your day.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.